Hello again, and welcome back to Enterprise Linux Security. And this particular episode is coming sooner because we're resyncing the schedule. I'll just keep that short. And also, we have some things to talk about that are very timely. So we had to adjust the schedule. And I think this is I don't want to say a good problem to have because I don't want people to have problems, but it gives us something to talk about again very soon after the last time we got together. So good and bad, I guess. How you doing?
All good, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here with you again, as always. And like you said, this is coming ahead of schedule because it's very timely that we discuss this new vulnerability. Because as always, vulnerabilities just keep cropping up.
And it seems like Java is the gift that keeps on giving, and I'm using a Christmas pun and here in the States. And to use another pun, I mean, Java has this slogan. I think everybody knows their slogan, right? It's write once, exploit everywhere. Or did I get that wrong? I think that's right. Is that right?
Yeah, that's probably right. And it's also right what they say on their installer when you're deploying Java, that it runs on billions of devices. So that compounds things even further.
Yep, it sure does. And to be specific, we are going to talk about Log4j, although everyone already knew that because they would have seen the title on the top of the screen.
Yeah, and it's the elephant in the room. It's been on the news all the time and everywhere, basically, even mainstream media not dealing with IT is covering this due to its scope. And again, to close the year with a bang, this is a really loud bang.
It really, really is. And it has a 10 out of 10 severity score, if I remember correctly, which is quite a way to close out the year.
Yeah, it is. So it has everything wrapped up. It's remotely exploitable. It's very easy to exploit, actually. It affects billions of devices with a B, not an M, billions of devices. And it's so easy to exploit that it's almost ridiculous. So the short version of this exploit, Log4j, it's a component that applications written in Java can use to write to a log. Obviously, it's in the name. And basically, it tries to log whatever the application passes it. For example, a connection attempt. If an application running on Java receives a connection from so-and-so, it will tell Log4j, okay, log this connection attempt from so-and-so. Here is the information. And Log4j, because it's very smart, will look at the information and will try to parse it. And when he finds a specific format in that information that it receives from the application, something like JNL, it's their format, apologies for breaking up there, but it can accept a URL. And when it sees that URL, it will attempt to connect to it. So an attacker can get Log4j to connect back to a system that he controls simply by trying to contact the application. And to top that off, Log4j will even try to run a payload if he manages to download something at that URL. So basically what the attacker is doing is just sending Log4j this, okay, get whatever is at this URL and run it. It's like an invitation.
It doesn't get any worse than this.
Yeah. It's ridiculously easy to exploit. And because this is deployed with Java and it's being run everywhere, lots and lots of devices are vulnerable to this. And I've seen the joke being tossed around as a meme. Even your toaster is vulnerable to this. Yeah, there are IoT devices like toasters that are running Java. And they have Log4j in there. So,
wow.
It's that TVs, it's phones, it's everything.
So this is just one of those things that there's like a multiple facepalm moments, and you know, we'll get to that. So Java is used, like you said, on billions of devices. And I joke, you know, write once, exploit everywhere. But this isn't a joke. I mean, this is going to give people some work to do over the holidays, possibly. And, you know, that's the thing that most administrators are hoping to avoid. They're like, please, server, don't give me a problem. I really want to have a break. And this is the worst possible time to have this happen. And considering how many devices use Java, I mean, I'm just blown away by how popular Java still is. I incorrectly believed it was on the decline, but even if it was on the decline, there's still, you know, a lot of things running it, and it's just everywhere.
Lots of Java developers just got mad at that comment. It's not on the decline. There are so many applications written in Java, so many platforms written in Java. And this, I mean, this stuff is used in appliances, in security appliances, in network switches, all that. The ones that come with those nice interfaces that are written in Java. It's either Java or HTML5, but the older ones are still running Java. It's very likely that their logging facilities are running on top of Log4j. There are basically two alternatives for this. It's Log4j or it's the default Java logging facility. Since Log4j is the most modern of the two, it's what most applications will use. And it gets bundled with the application. It gets bundled with the device that has Java running on it. So you're vulnerable to it even if you didn't deploy it directly.
So there is a script that will help you understand if you're vulnerable. And I say help you. I didn't say will let you know, because even the script, I ran it today, it's very clear that even if you pass the script, if the script says you have no known installation or files related to Log4j, the script even says that doesn't necessarily mean you're safe. It just means the script wasn't able to find it. But if you're running containers or something like that, I mean, Log4j can come in many different forms. It may be installed on a Linux server directly. It could be a part of a container that you sourced from somewhere else. It could be, like you said, your appliances on the network could have it built in. There's no shortage of things that might have this. So even if you were to say, well, our website doesn't run on Java, so we're safe, you might be. If you literally have Java nowhere and you know for sure that's true, yeah, but you could have that as a library or dependency of something else in a container, that's, you really do need to look and make sure that this isn't present.
Yeah, absolutely. And some numbers from the CrowdSec guys that we recently talked to CrowdSec people on the podcast, and they have this webpage that is tracking connection attempts and all that. There is some information as well from CISA and from Checkpoint, the firewall vendors. They're seeing 100 connection attempts to see if your server is vulnerable to these or not by malicious actors. 100 connection attempts per minute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a few.
It's quite a few. And this is happening constantly. If anything, the rate is growing. And the internet is being constantly scanned for this service being present there. And it is stuff like home routers, stuff like TVs that are running Java. Phones are running Java. Lots of things that you don't usually expect to be vulnerable to this type of things will be. Watches, the wristwatches, some of them run Java. Some of them will have this inside of it. Even if you never deployed any software to it, it will still be running there as part of the system. As long as it's network reachable, it can be exploited, it can be attacked, and it can be controlled, basically, because in the end, you can get a remote shell to the affected device.
One of the things that really worries me about the industry sometimes that I feel really bite us and probably kind of is this mentality where, you know, we used to just build everything manually, and a lot of us will still do that. But some shops have switched to, we're not going to do that extra work because there's a container. We're just going to, it's easy. Just grab the container, put it in, we're done. We have the thing now. We can move on to the next project. And I don't feel like enough companies out there really analyze the containers and or whatever they're running and know exactly where their libraries are, what libraries are being used, how it's built. It's like, it does the thing. Let's do the next thing now. And do we really understand what's in our containers? And now I think more than ever, we have to know, I mean, we always should have known what we're running, what libraries are in place, what versions they are, and scanning for vulnerabilities, obviously. But now it's, I think that the people that don't audit their systems regularly and know exactly what components are in place are going to probably have the hardest time with this.
Probably. And it's more than just containers. We talked about this when we analyzed supply chain attacks. The libraries that you use to develop your applications, it doesn't have to be containerized ones. if you're pulling libraries that will themselves pull something related to this and get this into the scope of your application, you will be vulnerable without ever relying on it directly. It's ridiculous how these types of things happen. But like you said, most shops will not go the extra mile to look at what exactly they're bringing in whenever they pull a new dependency to their project. They just need something that solves their particular problem at that time. They find the library that does that, and they pull it. And in truth, it's really hard to analyze code. And it's really hard to look at the code of a library that has thousands and thousands of lines of code. It's going to take lots of man hours to do that, and you don't have the resources to spend that way. Even if you have the knowledge of how to do it, then in some cases you don't, because it's written in a different language, for example.
Right.
But it's trickier than that. It's not just saying, oh, I want to make sure that everything I pull in is secure and validated and all that. Sometimes, even if you want to do that, you either don't have the knowledge to do so, or you don't have the resources to do so, or the know-how to actually spot those types of mistakes. And again, remember that Trojan code vulnerability that we talked a few podcast episodes ago?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're eyeballing the code, even if the vulnerability is right in front of you, you wouldn't see it. It would be invisible. It wouldn't show up. You wouldn't be able to spot it if it was staring at you. So it's harder than just saying that they're not checking. Yeah, they may not be able to, but the problem will still appear and they will still be affected. So it's getting harder and harder. The vulnerabilities are getting more and more evolved. Or like in this case, this is a vulnerability. This was disclosed on the 21st or 22nd of November. It started to be exploited in the wild on December 1st.
Hmm.
But the funny thing is, the code that triggers this behavior has been in the code base since 2013. And Wow. We know that some groups have the resources to actually look at the source code of things and have the knowledge of how to do things and how to check for this. And like I've said before, it's not unthinkable that this has already been used in the wild before this. Again, right. I'm just speculating here. I don't have actual concrete evidence from it, so it's just tinfoil head stuff. But it's not unthinkable or unreasonable to consider that as a possibility. And Right. Now that it's known, this brings extra attention to the problem. This makes it so that more people are looking at the code that's causing this. And that, in turn, will make sure that more vulnerabilities are spotted. Like we were discussing before we started recording, this was fixed in an initial patch on version log4j version 2.15.0rc1, release candidate 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was followed up by release candidate 2, because the initial fix was found to actually still leave a hole and allow for denial of service attacks on the new version. So there's now a second version, and there's no certainty that there won't be a third or a fourth or so on, because as more people are looking at this, as more people are trying different attack vectors to exploit this, that more will emerge and more ways will be found to exploit this. So it's not unreasonable to consider that the patching frenzy that is happening right now, as people are getting scared and with all the stories around this, it won't be repeating itself week after week for some time.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's conceivable that, you know, obviously a lot of companies out there, they don't migrate to new distributions if they're on something old that has old software that's not going to see an update. I would assume that'd be especially bad for them because, you know, they got to get that patch somehow, some way. And yeah, it's just one of those things where it could be possible that somebody was out there using this and they're thinking, oh man, now everybody knows about it and it's not my secret trick anymore. Again, just, you know, hypothetical thing. We don't really know. Yeah. That's true. So how hard is this to exploit? Because usually what I go to is find the silver lining. You know, requires physical access. It requires this order of events to be just right at the right second when the planets are aligned. And I was hoping there'd be something there, but it apparently, from what I understand, it is not hard to exploit.
No, it's completely remote exploitable. So anywhere with a remotely controlled, with a remotely connected computer that can reach the target IP, you can trigger this. You can use this exploit. And the actual exploit code, the joke that's going around is that it fits in a tweet, and it really does. It's actually about half a tweet worth of code to exploit this.
Wow.
It's ridiculously easy to trigger this. Really, really easy. You don't have to jump through any hoops to get this exploited. And going back to what you were just saying about someone having a secret on this exploit, that's actually a thing, you know. There are people who hoard exploits and then either just sell them or just use them themselves. And some threat groups we know for a fact do this and are actively looking for new exploits to use. And we know that they hoard exploits. This has been proven before. And they will be looking for stuff like this. And they are the ones that are probably most likely to find new ways to exploit these or related vulnerabilities like this one. Because the thing is, as soon as you let people know that a certain vulnerability exists because this condition happens, in this case, because it tries to parse a URL that it gets feed, you can bet whatever you want that lots of other people will be trying that same attack vector on all other logging facilities, on all kinds of unrelated software to see if they are also vulnerable to that exploit. Because one thing that we do very well is go on Stack Overflow and copy code.
Right.
And when you copy code between different projects, you also take this type of surprises. If something affects you on one and you carry over the code to a new code base, it will carry over as well the exploit. So this is a known fact, and this is something that people will actively look for, either security researcher or threat groups or just random guys on the internet with some brains working. They will try to find new ways to exploit this, even if not in Java, even if not Log4j, but they will just try this attack vector on other applications to see whatever, if something is vulnerable as well. And you know what? They may be right, and they may find something that actually is. And the scope here is just mind-blowing. It really
It
is.
is. It's like one of those things, the more you think about it, the more you hate it. So easy to exploit. Is it easy to mitigate?
Well, it turns out that it is easy to mitigate. All it takes is one flag being passed to the application that you're running or to the platform that you're running, and it will ignore the message parsing part of Log4j, and it will just store whatever it receives. And it's actually pretty easy to do that. The
So
thing is, sorry for cutting you off.
no, it's fine.
When you have an appliance that's configured to run, say, a web UI for a firewall, and that is running Java and it has Log4j, you don't have the place to go to actually fix that before you receive a new firmware from the vendor. And when you receive that new firmware, to flash that firmware on the device, you have to bring it down. You have to cause downtime. And people are very averse to that. They don't like to take down their systems.
Right.
So it might take some time for the patch to be applied if the vendor provides the patch in a timely fashion. Because, like we started by saying, this is the holiday season. Some people are on vacation, some people won't be back to work until next year. It might take some time to prepare the patches for all the platforms out there because this affects all the patches, sorry, all the platforms. This is not Linux specific or Windows specific or Android specific. This touches on everything because Java is everywhere. And it's vulnerable everywhere. So there might be a big gap in security between this being disclosed and all the devices being patched. And you can rest assured, not all the devices will ever be patched.
Right. Yeah,
Ever.
I assume, only because I know this has happened many, 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 many times, where you have a vulnerability and you have a company selling devices, obviously, and there's going to be some that are, several years beyond their service period. And then someone calls, "Hey, I need a patch." Okay, here's our new model. It's $4,000. And, you know, no, I need a patch. No, buy our new model. And obviously some other companies, I'm talking about appliances here, but other companies out there might actually do it out of service. I mean, we just don't know how vendors are going to, how fast they're going to be. And like you said, there's vacations people are on. Hopefully, you know, as hard as everyone works, I hope they get a vacation and don't get pulled off of their vacation to deal with this. But there's just going to be all kinds of, you know, shenanigans as, you know, a result of this. And at the worst possible time, you know, around the holidays for this to happen. I mean, no time is good for something like this, but we have to consider the human factor as well. And this is creating a lot of work all of a sudden for quite a few people out there.
Absolutely. We actually have a pretty good ballpark idea of how long it's going to take to patch all the devices. And the easy answer is too long. Mm-hmm. And we know for a fact that it takes too long to patch devices, for example, from the Spectre and Meltdown vulnerabilities that required motherboard manufacturers to provide updates to the BIOS on their equipment and for microcode to be updated on the CPUs. And we know for a fact that many models were not patched until a couple of years after the fact. And that's way too long when you have a remotely exploitable vulnerability like this one. If you leave devices unpatched, the best case scenario is that it is going to be taken over and being used as a bot to attack other targets. And that's the best case scenario. Mm-hmm. One of the worst case scenarios is that it's going to snoop on the network traffic inside of your infrastructure, and it's going to be sending that data somewhere else that you don't control. So it's going to be exfiltrating your information or your customers' information, or it's going to be attacking services inside of your perimeter firewall without you knowing about it, or deploying ransomware on your systems. And yeah, this is just going to be making the news for a very, very long time. It's right. Going to be really tricky to get rid of this. When I was talking before about how to prevent this from happening to your services, there is actually a script going around that says that it can scan the one that you ran. That you run on your system. It does a bit more than just saying if you're vulnerable or not. I believe we're talking about the same script.
Most likely. It told me that I wasn't vulnerable on the server I ran it on, but it also says that, you know, it's a strong indication that you're not vulnerable. Doesn't mean it's 100% true. But if it did find something, I think it was, going to change the flag? Was that it?
Yeah. There is this flag. That flag that I told you that you had to pass when you were running your application, it can also be set on the fly. And it can also be set through this exploit on your system. So what happened was that some ingenious guy came up with a script that ran on your service. You called it remotely. It was hosted on GitHub. And if it found that your service was vulnerable, it would set the flag to true, and then you would no longer be vulnerable. It worked sort of as a vaccine, like a vaccine would work. It would remain not vulnerable until it would be restarted, either the server or the service. So it was not permanent. It was not a permanent fix, but it would solve the problem until it was rebooted. And it worked like that. It worked as a vaccine. Okay, this service, I know that it's vulnerable. I'm going to set this remotely, and now you're not vulnerable to it again. So you wouldn't get flagged by those scanners that are just trying IPs to see if they find something.
Right. So, I am grateful that the fix, or the mitigation, I should say, is easy to implement. It'd be especially egregious if this was like the Spectre Meltdown on that level of being hard to patch, where technically it's not completely mitigated, but, you know, could be between the motherboard firmware updates and the microcode, we have a decent, maybe not infallible protection against it. But with it being a flag, I guess we have that. But it's not the worst mitigation in the world, but it's also one of those things too, where who's all paying attention? How much is your security person paying attention to this? Or if they don't know about this, that's pretty egregious because it's all over the news. I'd hope everyone knows about it. And if they don't take it seriously, then, well, that's obviously there's going to be a problem there if the company's relying on that person to, you know, notice things like this. So it's, I feel like we can't get this podcast out sooner because the news is probably changing by the hour.
Yeah. When we say that it makes you not vulnerable, we're talking specifically about the initial Log4j vulnerability. If there is any evolution on the attack vector, if something changes, there's no guarantee that this mitigation will still continue to work.
Right.
Okay, so pay attention and don't think that this is going to solve your problem and you don't have to care about it anymore. This is just for the initial exploit that was published. So any evolutions on this, any changes on the attack vector, any changes on the payload that make it act slightly differently might avoid this mitigation. Pay attention to that.
Absolutely. And what are some of your favorite blogs? Because I feel like what everyone should be doing, the least everyone should be doing, is downloading some sort of RSS feed reader and subscribing to some security blogs and making sure to check that a few times a day. What are some of those blogs that you recommend people subscribe to so that way they might, you know, see news like this?
I usually follow the Linux security feed. There is linuxsecurity.com, and this is free publicity for them, so shout out. Mm-hmm. I follow their feed on Twitter. They usually come up with these headlines and just keeps you up to date on this. They usually are pretty good on being comprehensive on this type of things.
Yep, and there's all kinds of articles out there that are covering this from all experience levels. You know, the Wall Street Journal has an article. You know, some of them written by reporters who, you know, they're just letting you know what's happened. And they may not necessarily be tech reporters. Then there are, of course, the tech reporters that know very well what's going on, and they're looking deep at this. And depending on where you are in the spectrum, if you're the person who needs to actually do the thing to get rid of this, or you're the manager that needs to alert your person about this, either way, there's going to be a news story that you can digest that'll help you out. But yeah, I mean, I've always liked Krebs on Security, but I don't know if they covered this yet. I was reading some other articles. Oh, okay. I would be kind of disappointed if they didn't cover that there.
This was on CNN, for Christ's sake. Everybody covered this. This was published on CNN. So yeah, if it's there, it's everywhere, basically.
So I think only the most introverted of administrators wouldn't have heard about it by now then.
Yeah. This is public knowledge at this point. The scope of it, the way that it exploded so quickly. And again, it's because of the actual risk that it poses. This was scored 10 out of 10 because this is really dangerous. This is really serious. The number of devices that are potentially affected by this, it's massive. It's mind-blowing. It's billions of devices. There are more devices running this and vulnerable to this than there are people on the planet.
Wow.
Yeah. Way more than people on the planet. So
That I can't even wrap my head around that. That's crazy. Yeah,
it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. And to see the initial reports were just from Minecraft servers being hacked through this. The way that this exploded after that, it's amazing.
Yeah, that is crazy. Like, I knew Minecraft would lead to some things, but I'm not sure if what it was, right? You know, I like Minecraft too. You know, don't get me wrong. I have that installed, but I don't have a server necessarily. But it is a fun way to pass time every now and then when I actually do have free time.
You don't have to have a server to be exploited. You can, and again, I don't know by personal experience. I've going to admit this, but I've never actually run Minecraft in my life. But the reports I read about it, you as a client of a server running a Java version of Minecraft, your computer could be taken over through this exploit on the server. If someone exploited the server, they could get to your computer.
Right.
To see how this goes. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I play completely offline in every sense of the word. And I always have. It's not even because of this. It's because, you know, Minecraft is one of those games you're either very sociable and play with a bunch of people, or you just play by yourself because, you know, you just want to escape for a moment. And now it's kind of like, will you escape in Minecraft even if it is local because you're just so annoyed of hearing the word Java after all of this? Like, you might just not want to play it anymore. But, I mean, back to the enterprise side of things, it's... you know, my heart goes out there to all the people that are fighting, you know, these things on the front line and patching and convincing their bosses that it's time to do whatever's needed, even however much downtime they need or whatever it happens to be to get this done. A lot of stress. So hang in there, everybody. You know, my thoughts are with you for sure. It's hard, mm-hmm. but you're doing some great work. So keep it up.
Absolutely.
They need to hear this.
Yeah, they absolutely need to hear this, especially in a time like this. You're supposed to be on holiday, not dealing with this type of things. So, yeah, hang in there, keep up the good work, and try to fix as many servers as you can, because, yeah, I would lie to you if I told you this was going to get easier.
Well, I think someday it will, but in the near term, not really so much. And this is still developing, so we could be talking about this again, for example. I'm sure we will, no matter what. Especially, it's either going to be a small update or a big part two of our, you know, previous episode. Hopefully not the latter.
Yeah, absolutely. And just as another silver lining here, remember, most cloud providers are also running some Log4j in some form or fashion. Stuff like Elasticsearch, like Kafka, like Apache Struts, all of those are vulnerable to this because they rely on Log4j. So, yeah, this will not stop like it is now. It won't end now. This is just going to keep growing for, I would bet, a few more months at least. The story is not over now.
Yep, and that's the unfortunate thing. I mean, we IT people, sometimes, you know, analysts can be wrong. They think the next big thing, like, you know, they thought netbooks were going to take over everything, is going to kill off the desktop and the laptop. That didn't happen. But when it comes to security people, we're generally right. You know, we say it's only going to get worse from here, and it does. And I hope we're wrong. I really do. I hope we're wrong. And the whole point of this is not to give you guys anxiety that's listening to this. That's not the point. It's not to sour your job and make you so stressed out that you don't enjoy what you do. You know, it's, I still love this field. And this is just one of those things where I feel like as a community in IT, we need to like work together for the greater good of the entire industry and outside the industry as well, because this is everywhere, to just work together. You know, obviously a lot of people are in their own data centers, patching or whatever, communicate, talk, it's fine. We'll get through it. And I just love how hard everyone is working. I don't like the fact that they have to work hard, but the dedication is definitely showing through as people navigate this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, imagine if you were running an end-of-life service, an end-of-life system that no longer has any updates available, and you were going to be faced with something like this. It would even compound the problem more. And at TechSphere, we know that lots of people are still running CentOS 6, for example, right, which was end-of-life 4 or 5 years ago, and it's still going strong. There are lots of servers still running it. And other stuff like Ubuntu 14, for example, CentOS 8 is going to end support at the end of this year. Being faced with a situation like this, when the system is no longer being supported, when you're no longer going to get updates, it's even trickier.
It really
is. Think really hard if you want to keep running those end-of-life services, those end-of-life systems there, if you should upgrade, because things like this will just keep happening. It's part of the job, and it's what we have to deal with.
It really is. I also think, too, that if any company out there just makes a decision, like, you know, I know this product is end of life, but you know what we're going to do? We're going to release an out of band or out of period update for this for our customers, even though, you know, they may not be paying customers anymore, or it might be end of life. We'll still patch it. I'm hoping some companies do that. And if they do, we need to, like, really just like float them, like just brag them up and give them some good kudos and just make an example out of them, give them some popularity, some thanks, and just kind of like, you know, let them know we appreciate that. So maybe other companies might want some of that good PR too. But that is, that, you know, doesn't mean if they do give you that out of band patch, that's an excuse to keep running that legacy system ongoing. It's just going to get you by right now, this situation. But of course, end of life means there's many other things that are going to bite you, if not this. But if anyone does the right thing and just put some code out there or updates or whatever to help out, you know, thank you. I hope a good example is made of this. And I also hope that there's a lot of extra time that are given to everyone working on this to have some time to rest and relax.
Yeah, absolutely. And we as an industry, we need to really look at projects like Log4j that are so fundamental that they're being used everywhere. I can think off the top of my head of a few other projects like this, like, for example, curl, libcurl, which is used everywhere in your browser, for example. Projects like those need to be audited like hell. Everybody should be looking at their code and trying to find this type of things, because incidents like this will keep happening as long as we don't look at the code properly. Curl had vulnerabilities on 20-year-old code that was in the code base, and it was found only a couple of months ago. We need to take a look at fundamental projects like those. We need to pay attention at projects that are being used on many different other projects that are being included as dependencies. And we really need to step up the efforts on that field.
I 100% agree. Absolutely. Because we have the opportunity to shape the future right now of how much work we have to do in the future. I mean, if we find something early on, great. If things get audited and patched, that's even better. We'll just have to see how this plays out. And considering this is ramping up towards the end of the year, so as the year is going, you know, wrapping up, you know, this is ramping up, this whole thing, as the year closes. And it's like 2022 might start off to be a very interesting year for the podcast. And we were talking before this started, like, I love the fact that we have no shortage of things to talk about, but I also hate the fact that we have no shortage of things to talk about, because that means anytime we have an episode like this, people are, you know, dealing with something. We would rather like nobody have to deal with like, you know, troubles like this. We also wouldn't have anything to talk about, but still it's a conflict of interest in a way, but you know, that's the industry, I guess.
Yeah, we basically have two types of content that we address on the podcast. It's either foundational concepts of security and Linux management, or it's actual vulnerabilities and incidents that we look at. And we would very much rather focus on the concepts than the incidents, because the incidents mean that people are going to be doing extra hours that they were not expecting.
Yeah, maybe in a different universe, if multiverse theory is true. I just saw Spider-Man. That's another story. But if that's true, maybe there's an alternate version of us, and the podcast is named Enterprise Networking 101 or something. And all we do is talk about TCP/IP things and how things are connected. And that would be great. But you know what? You know, we enjoy the podcast, even though we have mixed feelings about the reason it exists. But we're here to educate. I think that makes it all worth it.
Yeah, I hope we manage to provide people with an idea of how this exploit works and the scope of it and why it's catching up so much publicity as it is. Because, again, it's really, really big and it's going to keep growing.
Yep. And speaking for myself, I'm not a Java developer, so I'm not able to talk as technically about this as I would if it was like a Linux kernel vulnerability, but we will have links in all the places where you find this for resources you can use to go deeper. Also to the script we mentioned, obviously look at the script before you run it. I don't want people to just blindly curl anything at all. Just because we recommend it, it doesn't mean we're endorsing it necessarily. I have run it. Absolutely. I have checked it. But obviously, if someone comes in after us, after this podcast closes and puts something nasty in there, always check it first. But we'll have the resources there and wherever you got this from to read about it, the tool, and you could take your knowledge even further and understand better how it impacts you and your company.
Yeah. Besides, we don't know at which point in time you're going to be listening to this. It can be months or years from now. So, yeah, don't just blindly go to the link and press it. Look at what it's doing before you do so.
Right. Yep. And that is always the case, even if we forget to mention it, which I don't think we will ever forget to mention that. But that's one of those things that we're going to keep trying to tell you guys. Look before you run. And that's very important. So, all right. So any other thoughts about this very interesting situation?
No, I believe we've rambled enough about it and we've scared people enough about it to for them to talk about during Christmas dinner. So, yeah, I believe that's all for today.
So this has been the Nightmare Before Christmas episode of Enterprise Linux Security. Hats off to all you guys out there. We love you guys. You guys are awesome. Keep doing what you do. We appreciate you, even if no one else knows to say that to you. We do. We know. We get it. Thank you. And keep up the good work.
Keep it up, guys.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening.